It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on yet another in a long streak of beautiful, beautiful Northeast Florida Saturdays. And if you're in the car or sitting around home or walking around with your headphones on or whatever it is and you can find the show, stick around for the hour. We'll promise you you'll at least learn something.
Well, judging by the traffic on the way in this morning, most of you are in your cars. It was crazy.
You know, I was telling Adam right before we came on, there is a reason that Jacksonville is among the most expensive cities in the country for car insurance. And it's because of you idiots, like the guy in the black SUV Lincoln, who thinks that if you tailgate somebody close enough, that somebody will speed up, even though there are three lanes of traffic moving exactly one slow speed. But I digress. It was bad, and neither of us can figure out why, but no. If you're thinking of taking Butler to go somewhere today, either don't.
Yeah.
Go back to the beach.
Butler westbound was a real mess.
It was only westbound that there seemed to be a problem. So if you're going to the beach, go ahead. You'll probably be fine. Anyway, where were we before? Digress. So
this is actually a financial show.
Yeah, that. For those of you who are always with us and have been for these 9 years and change, welcome back. We're so grateful to always have you there. And if you are new, maybe listen once, it'll become a habit. For anybody who ever misses a show that they didn't or that they would rather have heard, you know, you can always hear us Tuesday on our website?
Monday.
Yeah. On our website, VanWeeFinancial.com. You just go back to the podcast area and the blogs and all that stuff. And you can pick up our blogs pretty much anywhere blogs are sold, right?
The blog is only on the website.
I meant the rebroadcast.
Yeah, the podcast is available everywhere. It's on Apple Podcasts. Yeah. It's on Amazon. It's on Spotify. It's all your major podcast outlets.
Yeah, so there's absolutely no reason whatsoever to miss one. And if you want to ask us a question online, you can call in through the website. Also, write in on info@VanWeeFinancial.com. And you can always, of course, call the radio or email us. There's just any number of ways to get this done. But it's a lot more fun if you just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. There is a reason that in our 9 years and change that we have done the show live. And that reason is because we get to talk to you online in real time, and you never know what you're going to hear. I have spent a lot of time in my life complaining about people who always pre-record and do reruns and all that stuff. Radio's not that much fun if it isn't live.
Nope, not at all. The reruns are yesterday's news. We bring you the week that was every week.
Yep, and the week that was this week was a pretty fine one.
We're
on a roll here.
It was, and it was nice because it was not volatile. And last week, we could really use that. It was relatively calm, positive. So just one of my favorite kind of week. Yeah. We're not quite at a new all time high yet, but we also aren't very far from it. So we're a lot closer than we were in the last couple of weeks. So
that's for certain.
It's been nice. It's been actually 6 weeks since we last had an all time high. And the market, from a technical perspective, looks like it's going to potentially challenge that all-time high, perhaps even this week. So it'll be fun to watch and see what happens. I wouldn't even venture to place a wager on that right now.
Well, for those of you who understand or don't understand the difference between a forecast and a prediction, a forecast is a range of things that could happen that encompasses every possibility. It's like weather forecasting. But a prediction, the forecast might say there's a 25% chance of rain. A prediction would be, in your area, it will rain or it won't rain. There's a vast difference. My forecast is that we could very definitely break some records this next week. but I'm not going to make a prediction.
Definitely not. It's it will be interesting because there hasn't been a ton of economic data to drive the market back higher. What has come out has been generally okay, but
this week,
yeah, we've got some inflation data on tap. So yep,
the big kahuna in this whole market.
That could be the catalyst that either drives it up or reverses the 2 week trend that we've been on, and it goes back down. We'll see.
And there again, I'm not going to make a prediction on that either because I don't see any real pressure one way or the other. And correct me if I'm wrong, but
yeah,
it just seems like things are sort of loafing along with half of the things are up and half of the things are down and sort of on cruise control.
Yeah, I agree. And inflation-wise, I think that it's clear that it slowed way down from the rapid increases of a year or two ago. But it's obviously still here. But I do I'm starting to hear more pushback. And what I mean by that is I actually have an article about fast food that I'll talk about later and the and who has raised their prices the most and who's seen the biggest sales declines because of it. And it's really interesting. It's a direct correlation between raising prices and losing business. And I've seen some reactions to that recently. So we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah. Are you going to bring in the whole McDonald's scenario on this?
They might be on the list.
I thought maybe they would because that's probably, well, first off, the most important of all the fast food chains because they're just so massive.
Yeah, they're everywhere across the world.
Very much affected by California and very much affected by a lot of other things. And the response has been interesting. I'll tell you right now, you want to listen to Adam's take on that one because it's going to be a real kick.
It is good. It's good stuff. And it's just so relevant right now.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that in business school we learned to value a local currency was the Big Mac Index.
There you go.
Because Big Macs are sold everywhere across the world, and you look at the price of one compared to another country, that tells you the relative buying power of the local currency. So just it's such a huge company and just so relevant in this time of crazy inflation.
Yeah, and man, it shows when you go anywhere eat it, the inflation. If you wonder why people are so upset, go to the grocery store.
No,
go to McDonald's.
Crazy.
Any of it.
Yeah.
We heard from the big kahuna this week, and I did not realize that inflation was 9% when he took over.
Yeah. You're talking about Biden.
That one. No less than the New York Times did a detailed summary fact-checking on his 17-minute speech that he gave this week and found some people say 15, some say 16 direct lies.
Mm-hmm.
And the inflation lie is the one that is hurting us all the by far the worst. That it's just outrageous, the cost of doing much of anything. And then I was telling Adam earlier, too, that I got my homeowner's insurance renewal comes up in June every year. Got a minor little 56% bump in it. The increase in costs this year was more than I paid for the policy in 2020.
Oh, mine too. Mine was in before 2020, but still it was substantially larger than the cost of my initial policy.
Yeah, this is going to severely impact Florida's future if we can't figure out what to do about it.
No
doubt
about
it. Now, there are some new companies coming in that will put a little pressure on it, but they're coming in because at the current prices, they can make money.
It's very attractive.
They're not coming in so they can undercut everybody and take away a bunch of their business.
You never know.
But the competitive environment is always good for pricing.
Yeah.
But it's not specifically going to help us a lot soon. But any competition is good, and the more the merrier. Seven that I know of that are coming in, and I think there are more.
I think I heard 12 total.
Good.
Anyways, let's get back to the market a little bit.
Yes.
Of the major indexes, the NASDAQ gained the least this week. It was up 1.1%. The S&P added 1.9%, and the Dow was up 2.2%. So pretty good week all around And then in addition, both mid and small cap stocks had good weeks. They were up 2.2 and 1.7% respectively. Haven't seen that in a while. Mid cap value stocks did really well this week. They gained 2.3%. And well, in small caps, a little bit different. The value stocks did really well. The growth stocks did really well. They gained 2.2. So wasn't uniform across growth and value, a little bit different kind of week. And you'll see that in this, too. I'm going to talk about the inside the S&P 500. The big winner was utilities, of all things. It gained 4.2%. Very strange trade there. Financials were up 3.2% for the second biggest gain. The worst performing sector was consumer discretionary, but it was still up 0.1%. So nothing was down this week. That's incredible as well.
Yes, it is.
International stocks, also kind of a mixed bag. Brazil and India were both down more than 2%. Japan down 1.9%. So those three have been kind of the darling, well, a little bit, the darlings of Wall Street recently. So a little bit of a reversal trade there. China was down less than 1%, but France, Germany, Hong Kong, Italy, and Israel were all up more than 3%. So the winners outgained the losers, and the world index was up 1.3%.
Yeah, old Europe is looking pretty strong right now.
Yeah, they're doing really well. We saw several new all-time highs recently, just a month ago or so in Europe, and we're they're looking a lot less stagnant than they've been over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and if you're looking at your asset allocation and finding out that you don't have much in the overseas developed markets, you might want to take another look at that. I suspect this is going to go on for a while.
Yeah, but if you're using any kind of target date fund, you're probably overweight anyway. So
yeah.
Just be careful with that.
Absolutely true. All right, we've got a lot more to say, obviously. So we're going to take a little break, come right back with trivia and more. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We had an unusual thing happen. It actually was happening all week, but it actually happened on Friday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up for 8 straight days. I have a little mental rule that says at 7, you're pretty much at the end of your line and you're probably not going to make any money tomorrow. Well, this time it was a little different. It went 8 times in a row, and who knows what Monday will bring. Again, no forecasting from me. But how many times have we had a streak of 8 consecutive up closes on the Dow in the last 71 years? And I'm not going to give any hints.
All right.
Just like that. All right, this week, where do you want to head next on this thing?
Commodities, they had a really good week.
Yeah.
We saw big rallies in silver and natural gas, and then we saw gold
Well. Natural gas?
Yeah, natural gas. A big jump in natural gas.
Glad I was sitting down.
Yeah, though all of that drove the index up by 0.7%. Silver was up 6.4%. Natural gas was up 5.4%. Still probably negative 50-60%.
Oh, yeah, like that.
But it's up 5.4% this week. Gold was up 2.7%. Oil posted a small gain for the week as well, although the price of a barrel has come down from the 80s mm-hmm. to the high 70s now, so that's been a nice improvement.
I was really happy about the silver thing, too, because silver's not been making any sense.
No, it hasn't.
It's being consumed like there's no tomorrow, and the price is just been gradually rising, and every time it gets built up a little bit, they slam it back down. Of course, it's all subject to manipulation, but still, I'm happy that it's doing this.
One area that really didn't see much movement this week was fixed income. It was almost flat across the yield curve. Interest mm-hmm. rates were pretty much ended the week unchanged. Despite interest rates not moving this week, the yield curve is still very inverted. It has now been 561 days since the first inversion, and on average, a recession starts 589 days after the inversion. So we are getting really close to the average. But I will say, the Atlanta Fed GOP Now tracker just jumped to a forecasted growth in the second quarter of 4.2%.
I read that this morning, and I just, what? Huh?
Yeah, we're but it's even if it's closer to the so the consensus forecast from economists is 2%. So even if we're closer to 2%, we're still nowhere near the negative GDP growth that you need to have a recession.
No, so, the way they do this, they track a bunch of things that are actually happening, and they accumulate them over the course of a quarter. So they're not saying, "Well, we're due for a 4% or so. Let's predict that." And they're actually developing these things, and they've been doing it a long time. I remember a couple of times when they were off, couple of points even, but they generally have a good pulse on the economy and the direction.
I can feel 90%+ confident that you're not going to see a negative growth in the second quarter.
Oh, I would probably go along with that.
Yeah. So although 589 days is just the average, so mm-hmm. it could be much higher. Obviously, it's not going to be much lower because we're already at 561. Will it happen? I don't know. But the yield curve has 100% track record of predicting recession. So kind of something to keep an eye on.
You know, we did have that recession that nobody will talk about.
But that was before the inversion.
So maybe it predicted the inversion.
Maybe. Just got it backwards.
Yeah.
Earnings season is rolling along, and it's still on the good side of average. So that's positive news. We aren't setting any records in a positive or a negative way. But the results have been pretty solid. Companies that have reported have beat their earnings forecast 69% of the time and beat their revenue forecast 64% of the time. Companies that have raised forward guidance, actually that's happening more often than lowering it by about 1%, and that's a positive sign as well. So it's not the best season that we've seen. In fact, it's significantly lower than many recent quarters, but it's still above the long-term average, so that's good. The only negative to this earnings season has been the reaction on stock prices on earnings day. Companies that have reported have ended the day trading 0.14% lower than where they started. So even companies that beat aren't necessarily getting rewarded for the results. There's about 20 companies so far that have released their earnings, and they ended the day down more than 25% in the trading. The clear loser was Trace Medical Concepts, ticker TMCI. TMCI ended down 62.5% after, get this, they hit their earnings target on the nose.
How dare they?
They beat their revenue target, and they lowered their guidance, and they traded down 62.5%. But this is even better. On the other side, I have no idea how to say the name of this. I'm probably going to butcher it, but Perficient? Something like that. They missed their revenue. They missed their earnings. They offered no guidance, and they gained 52.28% on the day.
See,
that they
sometimes
announced.
It is best to say nothing at all. Yeah,
exactly. Pretty crazy.
That is nuts. Yeah, how perceiving something in the market, you never know.
Yeah, this
We've
is why we
about
don't
this a lot.
Do individual stocks no. because you just it's impossible to predict what is going to happen, and even when things go what appears to be right, you can lose 62.5%.
Yeah, and a lot of it has nothing to do with what's going on. It has to do with what you say at the end. That's why there are a lot of big companies and a lot of small companies that just threw up their hands and said, I'm not going to do guidance anymore.
Yeah.
What if I'm wrong? I lose my job.
Get punished.
Yeah, the market punishes my stock. Just wait and see, people. It's a problem. 24/7, 365 cable news. There's so many hours to fill and so many people willing to fill them that they just talk. Much, much more difficult and involved than I ever want to be in picking stocks. And one of the reasons that we have never been and will never be stock pickers. I think you have to be some kind of foolish to do that. But that's just me.
I agree.
That's not what makes money for you, by the way. Choosing individual stocks is, if you're good at it, it might be worth 5-7% of your overall return, most of which came from how you've diversified your assets anyway. So if you want to spend all of your time looking for a 5% improvement, go ahead. Be my guest. You'll be a very boring individual, in my humble opinion, again. So anyway, it was good. It was fun. The one thing that caught my eye that I think is very interesting, Google searches, Adam's tracked Google searches on and off for years, and I caught one this week that the biggest spike in Google searches is for the word stagflation. Welcome to the 70s.
Yeah.
But Jerome Powell said, I don't see the stag or the flation.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely not stagnant yet.
No.
The inflation is definitely here. Mm-hmm.
When it's higher than it was 3 months ago, your trend line is wrong. And that's what happened. It ticked up a couple tenths over the last 3 months or so.
Well, it came down about 6%, and then it ticked up like a fraction of a percent. So it's not, if you look at the longer-term trend, it's still in a downtrend.
Oh, yeah, it's still in a channel, but we got to get it lower or the market's going to be unhappy with interest rates. Now, I can make a cogent argument for interest rates are really about right.
I really agree with that. I know that that's not what people want to hear. As a borrower, it makes it very painful. As a lender, though, it makes it great. If you're a saver, you get rewarded for saving. I, for one, hated when we had to put people in 1% CDs and 1% bonds. You can't make any money at 1%. But at 5%, that's a reasonable amount of reward for loaning out money. So yeah, it's always a double-edged sword with interest rates. There's winners and losers, and I think that the benefits to the winners at 5% outweigh paying more for a mortgage.
Yeah, I did a blog this week, and I went back and looked at some of the times when we had unusual interest rates, like the late 70s and early 80s, when the mortgage rates went up into the 16 2/3 range, and if you didn't have perfect credit, you're going to pay even more than that. And it took a long time to bring that down. And then I looked at a period like we've just been through over the last few years where it was basically nothing. I think the lowest average mortgage rate was down in the 2.9 range, something like that, but some of them were even better than that. But each time we get unusual rates, it's caused by the times not being good. So why do people sometimes react by raising rates and other times by lowering rates? Not sure. But times where it was in the zone where we are now, 6%, 7% for mortgages, those were times of relative stability. Mm-hmm. And we're there right now, but we're not in the zone of relative stability now. Things are still changing, and I don't know what to think about where it's going to go from here. I don't see rates falling anytime soon.
I don't either. Not in any meaningful.
I don't see them going up.
No.
Anytime soon.
I don't see any meaningful changes in either direction in the near future.
And my advice to everybody is grin and bear it, and you can de-risk your portfolio a bit by using T-bills and CDs and some great money market funds out there, which we have done. And what I'm looking at that for is I want to get back into the bond market, but not until the bond market wants to be entered. And all that means is you listen to the Fed, and when the Fed says we are going to start changing rates down, then start inching your way into the bond market and take advantage of the rise. More after the break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder that our trivia question is still out there. We just finished 8 straight up days in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a rarity. How many times has that happened in the last 71 years? It's just a whole number, but I'm not going to give you any hints.
Okay. So
if somebody wants to call in, 904-222-8255. If you take a shot in the dark at that thing, then you're helping the other people with a bracket, unless you're a really good guesser, and then you'll help yourself. So, like that. All right, enough of the market for now. Let's move along.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about fast food and pricing.
Yep.
And I saw a good article this week saying that there are certain fast food chains that have raised prices more than others under the the costs have definitely gone up. I don't think anyone can argue that. But raising prices in a way of to cover your costs is one thing. Taking advantage of market conditions is another. Not that that's wrong. It's what a good business should do. But at some point, it will start to hurt you. And that has is definitely starting to happen now. You look at the price of a medium fry in 2014 at McDonald's was $1.59. In 2024, it's $3.79. That's an increase of 138% in 10 years. Ugh. Yeah, that's big numbers. But that pales in comparison to the beefy five-layer burrito at Taco Bell, which in 2014 cost $1.59 also, and today costs $3.69. And yeah, so these things are, it's just, it's everywhere. It's over 100% inflation in 10 years.
And that's not potentially counting any shrinkflation that might have gone on in that time either.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know that either of those things has changed in that way, but it's not impossible either. I do know that when I go to Dunkin' Donuts now, mysteriously, the bottom of my cup is now about 2 inches from the actual bottom of my cup.
Well, that's so all the grounds will filter around to a little ring on the bottom, right?
No.
There can't be any other reason, can there?
No, definitely not. Pretty incredible that they try and sneak these things in, and it's crazy. But overall, they put out a list of the top 10 most guilty chains of raising prices. At the bottom, number 10 was Panera. They're only up 54% in the last 10 years. You've got sort of the middle, which is Jimmy John's, Arby's, and Burger King. They're all up about 55%. And then at number 4, you have Chipotle up 75%. Number 3, Taco Bell up 81%. Number 2, Popeyes, 86%. Number 1, McDonald's, 100%. Increase in 10 years in prices. So it's funny, we were talking about this just a couple of months ago on the show, and I had gone to McDonald's and was absolutely,
I remember,
shocked. I don't go very often, so that probably explains part of it, but it was shocking how much it costs, and I mentioned it, and it turns out it's not just me, it's real. They're up 100%. Now this week they also came out with an announcement that they're going to do some sort of $5 value meal in an attempt to regain some lost customers. So it really is having an effect on their top line. It's, you know, raising prices increases your top line, but losing customers can take it away just as fast.
Did you catch the rest of that story?
Not sure what you mean.
They actually started introducing this to some of their franchise holders a few months ago, and the franchise holders didn't implement it in their stores. They didn't want to hurt their sales and profits.
But now they're starting to feel it, especially as public scrutiny grows. When the news is talking about it, when people like us are talking about it, it's not good press for McDonald's.
No. Well, that $18 Big Mac thing, that the story that kind of put a ripple through the whole economy and all the media, that's just absurd. It's absolutely absurd to pay that kind of money for something like that. And I know what I do about it. I make my own. And so, I might add, they're better.
So the traffic, let's see, their revenue dropped for the first 3 months of 2024 compared to 2023. The revenue is down 3.5% at fast food restaurants.
If you're running a business on the margin, that's where you lose most of your money is when your sales cut back 3%.
Well, it's worse than that though, because if you're down 3.5% on margin on greatly increased costs, you've lost a lot of business.
Yeah,
you're obviously making it up on price to a degree, but you've lost a lot of traffic.
Yeah, kind of like the good old days in manufacturing when we were getting business taken from us and all my friends mostly from China. And we used to say that we strap a quarter onto each part before we ship it, but we make it up in volume.
Yeah. You know what didn't make this list was In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, and that's on purpose.
Yeah. They've managed to keep their prices
low. I don't remember that lady's name, but she kind of inherited the whole thing.
Yeah, she's a family member.
Yeah, she is a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually seems to care.
Yeah, I agree.
And Adam, having just experienced it a few times in California, it apparently is working.
Definitely. Yeah, so this is, I just thought that this was interesting. It's a really good study in sort of the cost curve and the value proposition of supply and demand. It's you can raise prices and increase your revenue, but it does come at a cost of lost business.
I doubt it does. Well, you know, everybody's got to fight it their own way, but it's not going to be self-curing. And one of the reasons it's not is because inflation itself is caused by, as Milton Friedman always said, inflation is and always will be a monetary phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
I think we brought up last week the discussion of why governments print money and then sell bonds, and that head of the White House Economic Council couldn't really figure that one out except to say, well, it's true that governments print money, and it's true that governments sells bonds. So why is it so complicated? Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen. I truly love your conversations on inflation, what it is and what it isn't. And I think this fast food thing brings to a lot of people's attention.
That's hitting close to home, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned before the guy that does the who is it, the CAP index?
Yeah.
You know, that's a real valid thought, but I thought there might be something interesting, and some of your listeners may be able to help with the input. But a small business that has been in business for a long time in food service of some kind probably knows, yes, at this point in time, like, for example, for a bakery, flour cost me this. Wages to run the business cost me this.
Mm-hmm.
And follow those things through. And that's telling you real inflation, not this, you know, how many things that people don't ever use that are in the present inflation and disease.
Right. Marshall's referring to the Chapwood Index, which is held by, it's concocted by a guy named Ed Butowski, who is kind of a character in his own right, but I digress. But the Chapwood Index follows the same items purchased in the same cities, and he collects that data every 6 months and puts it together. And if you see the numbers, actually, Marshall, I haven't looked it up.
Oh,
Adam got it for December?
For Jacksonville, in
fact. You're going to love this one, people.
Yeah. So in 2022, he says that the actual inflation in Jacksonville was 14.6%. And in 2023, that dropped to 10.1%. That puts us at number 11 nationally in inflation.
Ooh, the bad ones, I assume, California?
Let's see. I'll go back one page. It would be New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Philly, Phoenix. Yeah, right where you'd suspect.
Mm-hmm. So, Marshall, numbers are a little higher than what you hear on TV, aren't they?
Yes, but the one thing that, just as I happen to walk out of the bagel store here as I'm listening to y'all, I'm thinking of, you know, someone locally runs a business and analyzes their costs very different than these franchises, because these franchises have to buy their product from the major company or their distribution center, who plays games with their numbers, you know, versus,
sure,
you know, like the guy who's had a pizza place for 20 years. I mean, he's buying and doing what he can do.
Yeah, get a new vendor.
And that's reality. Yeah. But, I mean, how many different points in the McDonald's chain, and I'm not talking chain of stores, I'm talking the production chain that comes through. How many different points does the corporate entity take out a little piece from the franchisee?
It's unknown to me, but a good question.
Well, just a thought, and I know you've got a real smart bunch in the audience, so somebody might think of, yeah, a particular baker or somebody else that's been in business for a long time in a mm-hmm. location. Yeah, might be willing to share. I know Publix would never share that data with
no,
you
no.
to get real world. But right. that small business, yeah. Because they're not, you know, like Publix today, after they had their surge, they've been buying all their real estate.
I didn't well, know that. That doesn't,
you know, that's not what we're asking about. We're asking, you know, what's the cost of the loaf of bread?
Yeah.
So
I did not hear
well,
that.
Well, thank you. Let me give you a wild guess to give you a start on the number of times.
Please do.
How about 13?
13 is too low. Okay. You're thinking right, but it's a little too low. And we appreciate it. We have now an open-ended bracket, which would be a left parenthesis or something like that. Take care of yourself. Enjoy this.
Thank you all.
Beautiful Bye-bye. Day. Thanks for the call, Marshall.
So I hadn't sorted that exactly right. It looks like that it's actually a little bit different. I had to sort the table. So the top ones are Oakland, San Francisco, Boston, Seattle, Portland, Milwaukee, Long Beach, Detroit, San Jose. So okay. lots of California representation in the top 10. Jacksonville is actually lower than 11. We're probably closer to the 25-ish. So right in the middle of the top 50, okay. but a significant amount, but nowhere near the levels of some of the California cities.
Well, we have been raising our minimum wage. You know, that passed as a constitutional amendment a few years ago. But we're raising it a lot less than the jumps from $15 to $20 and that kind of thing. Yeah. That's where you really impact it. I also saw where, I think it was McDonald's, they are counting the number of burgers that were flipped by robots. And that number is growing real quickly.
I bet.
The law of unintended consequences is alive and well in not just in the federal government, but also in the state and local governments. And it's not going to get better. I just have one right here that it's just another look at how they can't stop spending money. Biden has opened up DACA people to Obamacare, meaning subsidies and so on. And they did it by changing the wording from lawfully present to present.
Present, yeah. Sure.
We'll be right back after a short break. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we still have the trivia question open. We just finished up 8 straight days of green numbers on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is a rarity. How many times has that happened over 71 years? And we know from Marshall that 13 is too low. All right. Good news for all you crypto types. Remember Sammy Bankman-Fried, SBF? He's the guy who started ripping people off pretty much the day he was born, I think. Just seems to run in his blood, but that's another story altogether. Anyway, FTX, the company that went bankrupt, they have now found enough of Sammy's money that's been stashed around all over. It wasn't actually Sammy's money, but he was manipulating it. They now believe that they will be able to pay back every single customer of FTX with interest. Not bad. Now, of course, that doesn't say anything about the people who invested in the company because they are screwed.
Yeah, but that's the...
That's the nature of the investor.
Yeah, yep. That's it.
You don't expect that as a customer, but you've got to understand that if you're going to put money into a risky venture, and these a lot of people did, and a lot of them are losing a lot of money. I am not sympathetic. That's not exactly right. I'm not empathetic. I don't know. It's theirs to know about, and it's theirs to lose. But I'm very happy about the customers. That's a good thing. All right, speaking of states and governments and costs and all that. California, as you know, was looking into reparations because California never had a slave in it, and California people never owned a slave, so they figured they ought to do something for whatever reason. And as it got studied and as the demands of the masses started coming in, they quickly found out that it's going to be way, 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 way too expensive to do this, which didn't even include the fact that they have a deficit of, what, $70 billion or something like that anyway, and they wanted to add another trillion to it, which, of course, is illegal and everything else. So now they're looking for other ways to do the same thing. And one of them is to subsidize the property taxes of supposed descendants of slavery up to $4,000 a year. And they seem to be running into a little bit of a problem called the 14th Amendment. You know what that one is? It's the equal protection under the law. And recently the Supreme Court banned affirmative action, and they're still trying to go around this. So I'm looking for some real cleverness in here that they think is going to get around it. It's just, you know, it's stupid government that creates all the problems that we have financially. It's never going to go away, apparently. Also, we've been talking on and off about the new fiduciary rule. The Congress has been trying to, in particular, the Department of Labor and the Congress are trying to change the fiduciary rule that's been around forever. The fiduciary rule is something that all investors need to know about. It simply means that if you're a fiduciary, you have to put your client's interests ahead of your own. Attorneys are fiduciaries. Registered investment advisors like Adam and Steve, we are fiduciaries voluntarily, I might add. And we have to put our clients' interest ahead of ours. And after 20-odd years of experience doing this, I'm telling you, it works just fine. It's funny, when everybody's happy, things just tend to work out. But the problem is the insurance industry, basically. The insurance industry does not want to be A, federally registered, or B, subjected to fiduciary standards. This goes way back to 1869, in a court case called Paul versus Virginia, the Supreme Court ruled that insurance is not interstate commerce. It's one of the few times something was declared not interstate commerce, when you think about it.
I don't see how it isn't, but
well, I don't either. But that just certified that it would remain regulated by the states, which is how it was originally set up. Well, that was overturned in 1944. In the U.S. versus Southeastern Underwriting. And then in 1945, the NAIC, which is the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, that means one from each state, they get together and try to lobby for the whole thing. Senator Pat McCarran, of Nevada, and Senator Homer Ferguson of Michigan got passed in both houses some legislation to put it back there under the states, and FDR signed it, and it's been affirmed in the court two times since then. But Trump changed it a little bit in 2020, and as a response to the health care problem that we all have now with Obamacare, it's still not a federal thing, but it's being challenged again. And the notion of the fiduciary is a real, real tough thing when there are commissions involved. And you hear us talk about it, you hear a lot of people talk about it. When you're buying something that's being sold to you by a commissioned salesperson, it's very difficult to know for sure that that commissioned salesperson is truly doing the best thing possible. Many of them will. Many of them are just that kind of people. They're in the business for the right reason. They keep their customers the right way. But none of them are too interested in being forced into a fiduciary role. So they rolled it out, and of course it's been challenged right now. And it's been challenged by one of the very large retirement insurance industry groups in the country. I don't know if they'll get it changed or not. It's hard to say. But the big deal now, and the focus has changed for the whole industry, fiduciary and otherwise, when it comes to rollovers. Rollovers have been kind of taken for granted by financial services people for a long, long time. We get people in all the time. I'm retiring. I've got a TSP or I've got a 401k. What should I do? And it used to be that you could tell them that you tell them the truth, but it, you want to take control of it when you leave the company. When you leave the company, leave the company. Well, that's not good enough anymore. Now we have to go through a very lengthy and detailed explanation of the pros and cons of leaving it as in or putting it into something else like a rollover IRA or buying an annuity or anything like that. I have absolutely no objection to the new rules that are making everybody do that because the bad ones are going to get found out by this and the good ones will continue to do business as usual. So just so everybody understands that when you're going to get ready to retire and start thinking about your options, find somebody who can truly discuss it with you as we can, of course, familyfinancial.com. We can do it easily and thoroughly. So it's a real fight in Congress and in the massive insurance industry right now, very much related to the whole concept of insurance being regulated by the states, because this is the feds interfering in that business in most people's minds. And frankly, I just kind of sit back and laugh at the whole thing, because if you do the right thing from the beginning, it's going to come out all right, and you're not going to get in trouble. So as I said earlier, when you are a fiduciary and act in every way as a fiduciary, it's pretty easy to walk away with everybody being happy. Evan's nodding his head over there because it's just so obvious. All right, a couple of the little things. I got one. I'm not going to get into it right now, but I'm going to, well, I guess I'll start it right now. The whole concept of financial planning is a time phase thing throughout your life. I found a pretty good synopsis of where you should be and what you should do at certain ages. And this one is done by a guy that I respect a lot. It's called the Chicago Financial Planner. And he's a very, very smart guy. Been at this forever. And I have learned from reading him quite a bit over the years. So I've been looking this over and finding some comments on the whole thing. I thought I'd start it out now. When I get to your age bracket, just kind of think about the things that came first and what you're doing just to see if you're following along. There's another whole discussion on how much money you're supposed to have at certain ages. I have more bones to pick with that one than I do with the processes. So things to know just as an introduction, that young clients should start and contribute as much as possible to their 401k or other workplace retirement plans. And how many times have you heard us say that? The younger, the better. This is what will let you, in fact, we had a great phone call from this last week, if you remember. And our comment to the young lady was, if you start now and do what you're saying and keep doing it, you will be a lot richer than any of your friends and neighbors. That's just how it works. Another one, after retirement, investors need to review and update their estate planning, especially if a spouse has died. And I said, that's true, but it's kind of late. If you're waiting until you have retired to start thinking about your estate plan, you're going to make a lot of mistakes on the way. Agreed? At age 50, savers ideally would have accumulated an amount equal to 3 to 5.5 times your current salary. When we wrap that up, as I was saying a little earlier, we'll talk about that because there's so many variables in that thing. In your 20s, I don't have time to do much more than say, get started and contribute as much as possible. I can't emphasize this enough. There are charts out there. How much would a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, 40-year-old have to save to, say, become a millionaire at retirement age? And the difference between a 20 and a 30 and a 40 and a 50-year-old are so astronomical that it should make you, if nothing else, instill upon your kids. That's it. 51 times we've had 8 days in a row in the last 71.